So we're going to begin with Sefta Sota, since, as I mentioned before on the group, during Sfira, we're supposed to be learning it anyhow, so at least during Chol HaMoed, at least during the first few days, we can be doing Sota and more or less keeping pace with the daily daf of Sota for Sfira. And after that, eventually, at some point, we'll go back and finish the rest of Gittin. So Masechta Sota, of course, starts by talking about the dinim of the Sota, the dinim where the husband, where the husband warns his wife, and then she secludes herself with another guy, and she becomes a Sota and the whole thing. So the Gemara begins by dealing with the question, why are the Masechtas in the Seder in the order that they are? We have Nedarim, then Nazir, then Sota. So what is Sota doing? What is Sota doing after Nedarim and Nazir? So the Gemara brings Tanya, Rebbe Omer, Loma Nismacha Parshas Nazir, the Parshas Sota. Why are the Parshias of Nazir and Sota placed one next to the other in the Torah? As we in the Torah, we have the Parsha of Sota is in Bamidbar Perek Hay, and the Nazir is in Perek Vav. Loy Malach. So it tells you Shakola Roya Sota B'Kokula. Anybody who sees a Sota in her degradation, and as we're going to learn later on in the Perek, she goes through a whole humiliating ritual, even if she does turn out in the end to be innocent, still they tear her clothes, they uncover her hair. Rashi brings one of the final stages of it, which is after her clothes are torn, they take a common type of rope and bind it on her body to keep her clothes from falling off. So anybody who sees that, Yazir Asmi Min HaYayin, should separate himself from wine. So therefore, Nazir and Sota have very much to do with one another. And in fact, later on in the Perek, when a Sota was first brought to the Beis Din HaGadol, they would tell her, you know, a lot of times a person is misled into this kind of thing by drinking too much wine, so you should also maybe realize that that's what you did, and confess that you actually are guilty, and then therefore we don't have to erase Hashem's name. So therefore we see there is in fact a connection between the Nazir and the Sota. Which in that case, there's a lot of interesting explanations about that. One of them being, you would think, if he sees her degradation, if he sees how she's being treated from having drunk wine and gotten herself into this compromising situation, you would think maybe that would scare him off to do such an aveira again. But on the contrary, there's a vort from a Mendel Horodoker that says that on the contrary, what may happen is the person is going to be left with the feeling, yes, there was a consequence, but on the other hand, there was an aveira, and then his Yetzirah is going to start thinking to himself, you know, maybe that Aveda was not so bad. Yes, there were consequences, but so what? You know, at least it plants in his mind the thought of an Aveda. It's al derech like you have with Amalek, Asher Korcha al derech, that everybody else was afraid to start up with the Jewish people, and then he starts up and he gets what's coming to him for it. But still, everybody else realized, you know what, the Jewish people are not invincible. So similar kind of thing over here. And there are various other points that made by various other Mephoshim. There's also the idea, for example, that when he sees Sota B'Kokula, it's not just enough for him to think to himself, you know what, I never want to be like that. He has to take immediately some kind of practical step to make that a reality, and that's by becoming a Nazir and then swearing off wine. With that said, though, our Mephoshim will point out that we learned here and there throughout Nedarim and Nazir when we were learning those here in Ein Yaakov that there are opinions that say that being a Nazir is not a good thing, and such a person is called a Choyte. So in that case, maybe Yazir Atzmi Min HaYayin doesn't necessarily mean to become a full-fledged Nazir, but rather just to swear off, to make a temporary neder, not even a full neder of Nazirus, but just a temporary thing to hold himself off from wine. So the Gemara says, Amar of Shmuel Barav Yitzchak, ki hava posach Rish Lakish v'Sota. When Rish Lakish would begin teaching Masechta Sota, or when he wanted to darshan in Parashas Sota, he would, Omar Hochi, he would give the following introduction to it. We often find that the Chachamim, when they would start a new topic, they would give an introduction to it based on a different pasuk that sheds new light on it. You have it, for example, in Medrash Rabbah, on Megillas Esther and on Megillas Eicha. You have a lot of psichtas like that. You have such things in the Gemara. So the Shlokesh's introduction would be as follows. A person is given a zivug, is given a wife as a zivug, only according to his deeds. So in other words, Rashi says, a tzniyasik, a woman, is going to end up being the wife of a tzaddik, and a prutza is going to end up being the wife of a rosha. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ki lo yonuach sheva teresha al gerda la tzaddikim. The staff, meaning the rulership of resha, of wickedness, will not land on the lot, on the girdle of the tzaddikim. So therefore, in other words, it's not going to have. Rashi explains that means that the memshela teresha, the rulership of wickedness, a woman who's a prutza, is not going to wind. Hashem is not going to make her wind up in the girdle, in the lot of a tzaddik. Marshall points out that also the continuation of the pasuk goes with that, here, appropriately enough. This is now those who are saying that Ebbetson's capital this year, this is her capital, capital Kof Chafei. So, and the pasuk continues, L'man lo yishlachu tzaddikim v'avlosa yedehem, where the normal word would be avla. Avlosa makes it an extra feminine plural, which therefore refers to a wife. And he goes on, actually, and Marsha goes on to explain various other psukim in that capital that also hint at this point, the following psukim after that in the capital also, Heitiva Hashem Latodim V'lishorim V'libosem V'amatim HaKalkaloisim, etc. So Marsha goes in there and then explains in some detail how those psukim also refer to the continuation of this, that you might think, so you see, sometimes you see somebody who appears to be a tzaddik and marries a woman who's not such a good person. So therefore, because it all depends on what's in a person's heart. And sometimes Hashem knows that a person may look good on the outside, but he's not really so good on the inside. And therefore, the pasuk continues, those who twist things in crooked ways, so they wind up intermarrying with the poyle oven, with those who do rishus. So you have several psukim back to back over there that all hint at this point about that Hashem arranges for a tzaddik to marry a tznua, and vice versa for a rasha. A couple of the Mefarshim point out over here that the reason why Rish Lakish gave this drasha is, first of all, because after all, we just said that if somebody who sees a sota b'kokola yazer atzma min ayayin, so why in fact, when it comes to the Mishnayos, why in fact is nazir first and then sota? So the Rif explains then that the Rif over here explains that therefore, he would introduce it with this point if he had been to begin with an Adam Kosher, if he hadn't indulged himself so much in wine, then he wouldn't end up with an Isha Prutza, where now the result is that he has to do kinnui and he has to cause her to go through the whole sorts of procedure and everything. So therefore, the Shlokish would use that as an introduction. And he goes on and explains several other angles on that as well. One of them, which also Ian Yaakov mentions, is that the parsha of Sota begins with the word ish ish ki sista ishtoi. When a man's wife goes astray, then you have the whole Sota procedure. Now it's primarily her. So why are we starting with ish ish? Start off with isha ki sista or something like that. So therefore, that led Rish Lakish to point out that it really depends on the husband. If the husband himself is good, then Hashem arranges that he ends up with a good woman as his wife, and then vice versa. And the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Baba Chana, Amar Rav Yechanan, V'koshel Azavzon K'kriyas Yamsuf. To make a zivug, to make a shidduch between a man and a woman, that's an appropriate one, is as hard, so to speak, for Hashem, as Kriyas Yamsuf, whereas it actually says, Kriyas Yamsuf, the whole seder of Maisa Bereshis was turned over, so the same way that's how hard it is over here. Shenema, as we find a pasuk that one thing it means, well, obviously nothing's too hard for Hashem, but it means, in other words, because Hashem prefers to work according to Derech HaTeva, and so to speak, to have to overturn it, like Kriyas Yamsuf, can be described, so to speak, as something difficult for Hashem. There are a number of other points in it as well. The Maharal makes a point on it. He says the comparison is, water tries to stick together. It's not natural, the Derech HaTeva, that water should split apart. Well, the same way, it's not natural, the Derech HaTeva, that a man and woman should join together. That they come from different backgrounds and they have different personalities and everything. So the fact that the Eibishter brings a particular man and a particular woman together is in its own way as much of an overturning of the laws of nature as Kriyas Yamsuf. Another point some Mephoroshim make as well is that by Kriyas Yamsuf, we know that the Midas Adin was arguing Manishtanu Evel Me'evu, why should the Jewish people deserve to be saved and the Mitzrayim destroyed? And the same way, when it comes to a Shidduch, then the same way, there's a Midas Adin, there's a Mekatrig saying why should this man deserve to marry this woman and vice versa? And Hashem has to, so to speak, override that. Okay. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, that Kim Moshe Yechidim Baisa, as the Pasuk compares them, Hashem settles individuals into a house. So Hashem takes an individual man and an individual woman and brings them together and makes a household out of them. Motzi Asirim Bakoshores, Hashem brings out the prisoners Bakoshores. So Al Tikri Motzi Motzi Asirim Bakoshores, Hashem brought out the prisoners, the Jewish people from Mitzrayim, Bakoshores, which Rashi brings, it means b'chodesh kosher, in the best possible month, meaning the Eidishter time, the Yitzias Mitzrayim, for Nissan, which is nice weather, it's not too hot and not too cold. So therefore, the Pasuk is comparing making Moshe Yechidim Baisa, bringing two individuals together to make a Shidduch. The Pasuk is comparing it to Yitzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf, which was the culminating thing of that. I'll take Motzi, Ela Kimotzi, and you don't read in the Pasuk Motzi, but Kimotzi, that it's drawing a comparison that Moshe Yechidim Baisa is just like Motzi Asirim Bakoshores. Medrashim also mention, a couple of them, Mephoroshim mention over here that there's also Medrashim that understand the word Bakosharis as short for B'chi V'shirois. There was crying and there was singing. They were crying from the Mitzrayim when they're drowning in the Yamsuf, and there's singing from the Jewish people, Oz Yashim. So therefore that more directly connects with Kriyas Yamsuf, which is why the Gemara is bringing in the Pasuk. By the way, you see from this an interesting point. Here we're saying that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim in Bakoshores, in the month that has the nicest weather. You would think out of all the details of Yitzias Mitzrayim, that's an important detail. And if Hashem had taken us out in the dead of winter, would it be any less of a nest? So the point is, even those little tiny things, Hashem is still looking out for, and it's for us to notice and realize even those tiny little things that otherwise in and of themselves seem unimportant, and realize to thank the Eidishter for those as well. And that applies not just to Kriyas Yamsuf, but to everything else as well. Okay. So the Gemara asks, Amy, is that so that you're telling me that a person's Shidduch depends on whether he has Schus or Rishus? So according to Rashi, the question is basically only on Rish Lakish that he said in Mezavgim L'Adam, Elo Lafi Maisav. And then the Gemara, just by the way, incidentally brought in what Rabbi Yochanan had said, Koshal Zavg and Kriyas Yamsuf in between. There are other Mephoroshim explain that actually the question is really on both of them. The question is on Rish Lakish, who says in Mezavgin Alofi Maisav, and Rabbi Yochanan, who says Koshal Zavgon Kriyas Yamsuf, meaning that it's so difficult, so to speak, because it depends on their Maisim. The question is, does it really depend on their Maisim at all? Isn't it predetermined? Va'omer Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. Didn't Rabbi Yehuda say in the name of Rav, Aboyim Yom Kodim Yitzias Avlad, for 40 days before a baby is formed, meaning when the baby is first conceived, because it takes 40 days for the baby to be formed in the womb to the point where it's actually considered a baby in halacha. Up until that point, it's considered what the Gemara calls maya ba'alma, just water, which has certain implications as far as dinim of pregnancy and abortion and so forth. Anyway, so abroim yom kodim yitzias avlad would actually mean when the baby is first conceived. Basko yotzis va'emeres, a basko comes out and announces, bas ploni l'ploni, ploni's daughter is going to marry ploni. And Tosfos points out, this would be when the boy is first conceived, whether the girl has been conceived yet or not, or whether she's been born yet or not. In fact, Marashal says that is exactly why the expression is bas ploni l'ploni. Why not just say plonis l'ploni? The reason is because at the time the announcement is made, plonis has not necessarily even been conceived yet, let alone born. Generally speaking, after all, a husband is usually older than his wife. So the expression is bas ploni l'ploni. Bias ploini laploini, so and so's house is going to wind up in the hands of ploini. Soda ploini laploini, the field that belongs to ploini is going to wind up by ploini. So the point is that we see that it's announced already when the child is when the boy is conceived, who he's going to marry. So what are you telling me? That's only lefi ma'isav, and that's difficult kriyas yamsuf. So Rashi says, so what? Doesn't Hashem know anything? Doesn't Hashem know everything in advance? And the answer is that no, because as we say elsewhere in Shas, Hakol Bidei Shemayim, Chutz Miyiras Shemayim, when the child is first conceived, the Gemara tells us in Nidah, Malach takes the fertilized drop, the fertilized egg, and brings it before Hashem, and then at that point, the whole course of the child's life is determined, is going to be strong or weak, or smart or dumb, etc., etc., except Tzadik V'Rosha Loikama. Hashem doesn't predetermine whether the person is going to be a Tzadik or a Rosha, so therefore, so how can you say at that time it's determined that, so here Rabbi Yehuda is telling us in the name of Rab that at that time it's also determined who his Shidduch is going to be, so how can Rish Lakish be saying that's Lefi Maisav, and how can Rabbi Yochanan be saying that's Koshal Azabgam to Kriyas Yamsil? So that's the question. It seems to contradict one another. There is, of course, there's quite a lot of discussion about that whole point, how it is, we know the famous thing that Rambam deals with it in Hilchos Teshuvah, and the Ravid disagrees with him, and there's a lot of other discussion about it in many, many different Sfarim, how it could be Hashem knows in advance everything is going to happen, and yet a person has Bechira Chofshis. In any case, the point is that, so here we're saying that Hashem predetermines who they're going to marry, but we also say Hashem doesn't predetermine whether... whether the person is going to be a tzaddik or a rasha. So how do those two things jive together? This that we're mentioning, by the way, bas plenty the plenty, bais plenty the plenty, soda plenty the plenty. First of all, Marsha points out, we see from that then, so it's not determined, it's not announced when the girl is conceived who she's going to marry, which explains why elsewhere the Gemara says in Nidah that the word zohar stands for zeh tar, which means he comes with his own food, with his own mazel of food, and nekeva means nekiya ba, she comes into the world clean, meaning empty of a mazel of her own, because her mazel is basically determined by the boy who she's eventually going to marry, and she has and she shares in his mazel. Anyway, another point is also like this. You have the Iyun Yaakov points out later in the Masechta. The Gemara mentions that the right way is that a person should first have a vineyard or a field, a source of parnasa, not a source, but a keli for parnasa. Then a person should have a place to live, a house, and then he should get married. So here we're mentioning. He were mentioning bas plenty, the plenty first, before bias and sada, which seems out of order. So he says, just because it's al-darach ha-seif ma'is and machshava t'chila, the most important is to get married, and therefore the bas will announce that first. Ben Yoyada says another point as well. It means that even though the Gemara is saying there that's the proper way to do it, and as the Gemara says over there, a foolish person does the opposite, gets married without having a place to live or a keli for parnasa, and then tries to work all that out afterwards. Nevertheless, if a person doesn't have those things, it still shouldn't prevent him from getting married, and therefore in token of that, the bas kol announces first bas plenty the plenty. Anyway, the point is that the Gemara has asked the question that how do we fit these things together? So the answer is like Kasha, Halba Zivug Rishon, Halba Zivug Shady. The answer is that there's a difference between the first Zivug and the second. The first Zivug, the first marriage, which we'll talk about in a second, what that means, is according to a person's mazel, according to what was predetermined for the man when he was conceived. Halba Zivug Shady, as opposed to if there's a remarriage, then it goes according to their Maisim, and now here's where the Shlokish is saying that it goes according to their Maisim, and here's where Rabbi Yochanan is saying that's Koshal Azavgon, because she's not his Bas Zug, she's not his Vasherta in the first place, and therefore that makes it much harder, so to speak, for Hashem to pair them up.
Is compared to the second marriage.
That's what we're saying. Now, what does it mean, first and second marriage? So there are Mephoshim who take it more on a literal level. That means, who say that it means literally, it means a first marriage versus where both of them have previously been married and then widowed or divorced. Now, in Halacha, for example, you have, let's say, when it comes to a Sheva Brachas, if either member of the couple has not been married before, then we have a full 7 days of Sheva Brachas, as opposed to if both of them have been married before, then we only have 1 day. So in a similar vein, if either one of them has been married before, if only one of them has been married before, then we can still call it Zivug Rishon, but if both of them had been married before, that would be Zivug Sheni. There are other explanations among Rishonim. Another explanation is Zivug Rishon means back in the day when people used to get married at young ages. So Zivug Rishon would mean when they get married at a young age before they really have much in the way of mitzvahs or of schosim or choivus of their own, especially based in Shemaila, doesn't even punish a person until they're 20. So that would be, it goes according to their mazel, as opposed to when they get married at an older age, even a first marriage, then that would be what the Gemara calls Zivug Sheni, and it goes according to their ma'isim. And then a third explanation, that a number of the Mefarshim bring based on the Zohar and based on other Sifrei Kabbalah, is that Zivug Rishon means the one who was originally Basherta for him, Min HaShemayim, versus Zivug Sheni would mean, in other words, Zivug Rishon is the one who was destined for him in Shemayim, but a person doesn't always end up having the schus to find and marry that one. Sometimes, for one reason or another, they end up marrying somebody else. We have even a concept in Halacha, for example, that you're allowed to get engaged even on Tisha B'Av. Why? Shema Yukad Menu Acho, because otherwise somebody else might snap up that shidduch first. What do you mean? It's Vasheret Min HaShemayim. But that's one meaning of this Zivug Rishon, Zivug Sheni business, is it may be that it was a Zivug Rishon that was determined in Shemayim, but not necessarily are you going to be Zoicha to actually find her. And it may be that, for example, somebody else will daven harder, or somebody else will have better schosim or whatever, and end up with her, and then you'll end up with Zivug Sheni, which is the one that wasn't originally destined for you Min HaShemayim. So according to that, then, it has nothing to do with actually a first marriage or a second, but rather what was determined in Shemayim versus what ends up happening in the real world. So the bottom line is, yes, there is a case where Koshim Lazavgam to Kriyas Yamsuf, and there's a case where it goes according to their Meisim, and that's what Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan are referring to. So the Gemara goes on. Further on, it gets into a discussion of the word kinui that we're using, the technical term where we say I'm a kane leishtoi, a man is makane his wife. So the Gemara gets into a discussion. So first of all, the Gemara gets into a discussion actually whether a husband should be mekane to his whether a husband should be mekane to his wife or not, whether it is a good thing to do. And in the course of that, the Gemara discusses what the word kinui means. The Gemara brings opinions that maybe it's not so good for a husband to be mekane for his wife. First, by the way, the Gemara does mention, and this is brought lahalacha, there is an opinion in the Gemara there on days and days that kinui can be accomplished even when there are no edim present. It's enough that he's mekane her privately, and that would still be a valid kinui. Therefore, the Gemara says nowadays that we don't have mei soita. If a woman becomes a soita, she's going to be also to her husband, because we have no mei soita to check her. Therefore, a husband should not say such a kinui to his wife, even privately, because what if the halacha is like that opinion, and then the result is if she does end up going and secluding herself with this other guy, then she's going to be also to her husband. So this is brought in Shulchan Aruch at the end of Eben Ezer. It also mentions, the Gemara elsewhere mentions, that a husband can be moichel on his kinui. So if he did, then what he should do is be moichel on the kinui, and that way before the stira takes effect, and then before she does the stira, and that way there won't be any problem. But yeah. Okay, so anyways, as I said, the Gemara gets into a discussion of whether kinui is a good thing or not. So in that connection, the Gemara says, ma'u loshen kinui. What does this word kinui mean? Amar Rav Nachman Yitzchok, en kinui elo loshen asra. The word kinui is an expression of warning. So previously the Gemara had mentioned that kinui can mean loshen kina, loshen jealousy, because it causes friction between her and other people. So that's what the Gemara mentions. For example, let's say he gives her kinui privately and nobody else is around. Afterwards, she's naturally going to be extra careful to stay away and not even get into a position where she might accidentally seclude herself with this guy that her husband warned her about. Now, meanwhile, later on, that's going to cause friction because people are going to think that she's being standoffish or something and not realize that it's because there was a kinui. So the Gemara discusses that and various other possibilities, and so now the Gemara is saying another thing, is that the word kinui doesn't mean anger or jealousy or anything like that. It means loshen hasra. It means a loshen of warning. As we find that in the times of Yoel, there was a tremendous plague of locusts, and then the Jewish people did tshuva and begged Hashem to get rid of them. And the pasuk says, sure enough, Vayikane Hashem outside, Hashem was mekane for his land, meaning that he warned the various species of locusts to stop destroying. So we see that the word Vayikane means to warn. Further on, the Gemara says, Tanya, Hoyer of Meir Omer, Odom Oyver Aveda Baseser, when a person does an Aveda in secret, for example, this potential site over here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Machriz Olah B'Galui, Hashem causes it to be announced in public. So in this case, Hashem gives her husband the idea to be Mekane to her, and then the whole thing becomes publicized. So part of the whole discussion, which we're going to go on in the next piece over here, is the Gemara is getting into the whole question of whether it's good for the husband to be mekane to his wife or not. So one way of looking at it is that Hashem is causing the husband to have a spirit of tara, and therefore to warn his wife not to be alone with this person. And this is all part of Hashem's plan to make it publicly known what she did. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, v'over all of ruach kina, v'kina as ishta, the spirit of kina, of jealousy, passes over him, and he warns his wife. So why does it have to say v'over all of ruach kina? V'ein avora el loshen achroza. This word v'over refers to announcing. Shenemar v'itzad Moshe v'yaviru koil b'machne. As we find, Moshe told them to make an announcement throughout the machne that everybody should stop donating things to the Mishkan. So we see. The overall of Ruach Kina means that Hashem causes it to be publicized through the fact that he gets a Ruach Kina in his mind, and that causes him to be Mekane for her, and everything develops from there. With that said, though, Marsha says, the fact is, this isn't a solid proof that it means a Ruach Tara. Again, further on, the Gemara is going to talk about that it might mean a Ruach Tuma. Fine, you could say that Hashem still works through the Satan and causes the person to end up with a spirit of Tuma in him that causes them to be Mekane. The point is that Hashem makes it be publicized. We find in Pirkei Avos a similar concept where you have the expression in Pirkei Avos, "Kol over kol machal Hashem Shemayim b'seis in Yifroim men b'golui," that a person makes a chilul Hashem in private, then Hashem punishes him in public in order that everybody should know what they really are. Ion Yaakov points out, in fact, you find that even in Tanakh, you find where Nosan Anobi says to David, after the whole affair of Bathsheba, that you did it in secret, and Hashem is going to make the whole thing very public. The Gemara continues, Omer Shlokish, Einonim, a famous expression, Einonim, Oven Aveda, Elenke Nichnes Vei Ruach Shtus. A person does an Aveda only if a spirit of Shtus comes into him. Shenemar, because again, from this pasuk about the Soita, Ish Ishki Siste Ishai. The pasuk says, any man, when his wife goes astray, now the word sister, Marsha points out, if it meant to go, the word sister comes from a shodash that means to go off the path. But if it meant that, then it would have said tita without the sin at all, because that would be from the shodash nota. And if you also have a shodash samach tes hey, which means to go astray, then it would write in the pasuk the word sister with a samach. So we have the word soita in front of us with a samach. It seems that in the times of Tanakh, samach and sin may have been pronounced differently, but by the time of Chazal, not necessarily so. So therefore, they freely interchange sin and samach. But in Tanakh, you don't do that. So if it actually meant from that shodash, then it would be with a samach and not a sin. So a person doesn't do an aveda unless they have a ruach shtus. Since it's with a sin, it can be read as with a shin, and in that case, it's meloshin shoyte, meloshin foolishness. Marsha points out that in the Medrash, it relates that specifically to Arias, to Niuf. However, the Lashon of the Gemara over here suggests that this applies to every Aveda. As we know, the Alter Rebbe explains in Tanya what this Ruach Shtus is, that every Aveda separates the Yid from the Eibishter, and if he realized that, then he would never do the Aveda, and even a woman like in this situation where she wants to be Menayef would realize that it's not anywhere near as serious a Nisoyan as being killed or Kiddush Hashem, and she would be willing to do that. But the Ruach Shtus causes the person to be convinced that no, it's not so bad, it's not going to make a difference, I can always do tshuva afterwards, and so on and so forth, and that's the Ruach Shtus. So the Gemara continues that Tana Dveid Avishmal Einon Mekane LeIshtei Elam Ken Nichnas VeRuach. A man doesn't warn his wife with this kind of kinui that triggers the whole sorta process, unless a spirit comes into him. Shenemar is again the pasuk that we quoted for overall of ruach kina, a spirit of kina passes over him, and we just said also for overall of means causes it to be publicized for kineis ishtei, and he warns his wife. So my ruach, what kind of spirit are we talking about? So Rabbanan Amri ruach tumah. The Rabbanan say it means a spirit of tumah. Meaning, in other words, that the Rashi says the Satan is trying to cause him, is trying to cause friction in his marriage, and therefore, convinces him to warn his wife in this way. Where, in other words, if it weren't for the Satan, in other words, he could be doing it with something less drastic. He doesn't actually have to give her that kind of official kinui. He could do something else, or even, I mean, you have actually at the end of Gittin, which again we'll get back to in a few days, Bez Hashem. You have at the end of Gittin the famous machlokas, the Shammai v'Hillel, on what grounds can a man divorce his wife. Where before Chayim Deben Negoshim, he could do it without her consent even. So fine, if he realizes that she's not acting properly, then instead of being mekane and causing this whole friction, in a way it might be better for him to divorce her outright rather than doing this whole thing and potentially causing her to die as a soita. So therefore, the Rabbanan are saying that's a spirit of tumor. Marsha points out, you know, you have, for example, in the Pasuk, for example, where there were a bunch of Nevi'im in the time of Ahab and Yehoshaphat, where the spirit of Novos caused them, misled them, and thought and caused them to think that they're having a true Nevuah, when in fact they're having a false one. So the same way over here, then the Satan is convincing the person to be Mekane to his wife, and he or she hasn't even secluded herself with this other guy yet. And yet he's doing that, so that's just calculated to cause friction in their marriage.
Ultimatum.
Basically, yeah, giving her an ultimatum. Rav Ashi Amar Ruach Tara. Rav Ashi says it means a spirit of Tara. He hates Pritzus, as Rashi says, and he wants to prevent his wife proactively from becoming a Pritza. The Gemara says, we stab the commander on the Ruach Tara. It is more logical to follow the opinion of Rav Ashi that it would be actually a Ruach Tara. And therefore, that when Rabbi Shmuel had said, Elim ken nichetz ruach, then it means actually a ruach of Tara. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk says, V'kineyas ishtoi, when the Pasuk says that the man warns his wife, Rishus divi Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel learns that this is a Rishus. It's not that he has to do it, but he could do it if he wants to. Rabbi Akiva oim choiva. And Rabbi Akiva says not just the Rishus, he's obligated to. If he has reason to suspect that something's going on over here, then he's obligated to warn her. Now, so Iyamit Beshlema Ruach Tara Shaper. If you say that it's a Ruach Tara, like Rav Ashi says, then sure, it's easy enough to understand why it would be a Rishus or even a choiva for him to do it. Eli Amit Ruach Tuma, but if you're going to tell me like the Rabbanon that it means a Ruach Tuma, Rishus v'choiva la'ayyuli le'inish Ruach Tuma b'nafshei, does a person have Rishus, let alone an obligation, to bring into himself a spirit of Tuma? So therefore, it's more logical that Rabbi Shmuel is explaining that the Ruach would be a Ruach of Tara. He feels this revulsion to this idea of Pritzos, and he wants to proactively make sure that his wife doesn't do that, and therefore he gives her this warning. The Gemara, by the way, goes into this is not the Gemara gives several other examples of things where the Torah says to do something, and each one of them, Rabbi Shmuel holds as a Rishus, and Rabbi Akiva holds as a Choyva. You have several other examples that the Gemara brings. Tosfos, actually, it's not here in Ein Yaakov, but Tosfos in the Gemara brings up an interesting point. We know there are Tayag Mitzvahs. If according to Rabbi Shmuel, some of these things are Rishus and not Choyva, aren't you missing a few of the mitzvahs? So there are, in fact, some Rishonim who say, based on that, maybe the listing of Tayag mitzvahs is not universally agreed to by everybody. Maybe Rabbi Shmuel is not obligated to hold like Rabbi Simloi in the Gemara and Makkos, which we'll get to in a few weeks in Daf Yomi, Bez Hashem, that says that there are 613 mitzvahs. On the other hand, the Ramban says, listen, you know, you have, for example, that the Gemara mentions in Menachos, there's Machloikas, also to be Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, whether, like this, you have to have four tzitzis on your garment. Are they considered four separate mitzvahs or one big mitzvah? Rabbi Akiva holds it's one big mitzvah. Rabbi Shmuel holds it's four separate mitzvahs. Well, then, very well, you have three mitzvahs that the Gemara is saying over here, that Rabbi Shmuel holds are actually Rishus and not Choyva, and Rabbi Akiva holds that they're Choyva. So therefore, it very neatly makes up three for three. The Gemara goes on. Omer of Chista, znusa bebesa, znus in a household, kekaria lashumshime, is like a worm in sesame seeds. So the worm eats the sesame seeds the same way znus destroys the household. There are a couple of other explanations what kaviyah l'shumshmi means. One of them being Tosfos Shantz brings an explanation that the shumshmi is a type of insect, and kaviyah means heat. So the same way as heat destroys insects, the same way as the znus destroys the household. following the possibility that we do mean sesame seeds over here, then the Meiri explains these kinds of bugs eat sesame seed from the inside. From the outside, it looks perfectly good, but then you open up the sesame seed and you find there's nothing there. The same way, the house looks very stable on the outside, but then you discover that it's rotting away from within. But Amra Papa, or Rav Chista, Tukba Bebesa, anger in the household is also Kakaya Lashrum Shemi, is also like a worm in sesame seeds. However, both of those apply to the wife whose nus or her anger could destroy the household. But it doesn't really matter so much if the man does. Rashi explains when the woman is mezana or when she's very angry, then she's busy with that, and then she doesn't do the household work and she doesn't watch the house, and she ends up using all of her husband's mammon on the men that she's menayef with. So therefore, that's why Rav Chista is saying that it more depends on her and not so much on him. A couple of other interesting things in that. The Maharal has an expression in one of his Sforim. He says that, you know, we have in Meiriv, we have a Lashon Emes ve'emuna. So he says Emes is more the man and Emuna is the woman. So therefore Emuna means faithfulness, being faithful to your mission is more important for the woman. And that fits with what the Gemara is saying over here, that it's more important for her to remain faithful and otherwise the house gets destroyed. There's an interesting explanation from Rav Levi Yitzchak, that his father, that talks about the deeper Kabbalistic idea behind this. He says, shum shum over here, sesame seeds, represents Rachel and Leah. And he explains, because you have the expression in the pasuk, shame hagdola Leah, vishame, haktana Rachel, and the letter is shame vishame, rearranged, spell out shum shum. And he goes and explains it, and he explains Barichos how these two things are expressions of Gvura that can destroy the house that are built by Rochel and Leah, and Rav Chista, who represents Chesed by his name, wants to counteract that, and therefore he's the one particularly who points out the danger of these things in a house. But in other words, you can't have these things. The house has to be built with chesed rather than with an excess of gvura. And it's the woman, it's the Rochel and Leah, as the Pasuk phrases it, Ashabonu Shein, as Beis Yisrael, the two of them built up the house of the Jewish people, and therefore it depends more on them. Okay. Yem Yem Mashiach Ha'Gu'ola, Yud Zayin Nissen. So we talk about that we have the Kos Shel Eliyahu by the Seder, and there's a few different reasons that are given for the Minhag. One is because we have the connection between Eliyahu HaNavi and where Eliyahu HaNavi is going to be coming to announce the Gaula. In fact, it also encourages Eliyahu himself to come to the Pesach Seder, and once he's here, to actually stay here. And also strengthens our emunah and our looking forward to Bias HaMashiach, HaKalah B'chol Yom Shiyavai, and especially, as the Rebbe says, in our generation, we were the last generation of Golos and the first of Gola, Hinei Zeh Mashiach Ba, so therefore it's more important to strengthen that emunah by ourselves, that Mashiach is going to come, and that Eliyahu is going to come and announce it, and therefore we have the Kos Shel Eliyahu in token of that. Beginning with a new simon in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch about the dinim of Motzei Shabbos and Motzei Shabbos, Ma'ariv, and Havdalah. So we daven Ma'ariv on Motzei Shabbos a little bit later to be Mosif Mechol al HaKodesh. We also in some places they do Vohu Rachum and Vohu with a little extra tune to add Mechol al HaKodesh again. You say Atachon Antonu in Ma'ariv. If you forget it, so if you remember before you say it, Baruch Atah Hashem in Chonen Ados, then you say it right there, and then you continue V'chonenu, and then go back to V'chonenu. If not, then you just finish the bracha, and you don't go back because later on you're going to be saying Havdalah Ala Kois, so therefore you don't really need to say Atachon Antonu. The Alter Rebbe adds that if you want to say a Tfilas Nedava to say it again, say Atachon Antonu, you could do that. However, though, it would have to be that you can't do any malacha or eat anything in that case before you make Havdalah. The Alter Rebbe goes into a little more detail. That means even things that are also Drabbanon. On the other hand, things that involve speaking, those kinds of things would be allowed in that case. And then Yesh Matir and all the other things that are only because of Uvdin Dechoyl. But in other words, the point is like this. If you said Atachon Antonu, then at least you can do those things before Havdalah. But if you didn't say Atachon Antonu, and then you did one of those things, and you also didn't say Baruch HaMavdil, then you would have to daven again, because then you would have to daven again in order to say Atachon Antonu. The Alter Rebbe makes a different point, that another possibility is you can say Atachon Antonu in the Baruch HaShemei Atfila, if you forgot it, in Atachon Antonu. If in that case, where again, he did Malacha, and he has to say, Shemana Esrei again, then if he forgot in Shema Tefillah, then he can start, then he has to start over from Atachon, and if he finished Shemana Esrei, then he has to start over. Again, all in that case where he did Malacha after Ma'ariv, before having forgotten Atachon Antanu, and not having made Abdullah yet, and not having said Baruch HaMavdo. If you said Atachon Antanu in davening, or if you said Baruch HaMavdo, then you're free and clear, and then if you did forget Atachon Antanu, you don't have to daven again.